Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of May.
The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
Joining us, we're devoting a full 2 hours to this subject. This hour, the first hour, is Thomas Goodyear. Thomas serves as the Dean of International Studies and Programs at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and he is the Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at University of Nebraska. He has a very interesting background. He served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Afghanistan many years ago and then lived and worked in that country for some 10 years. He served as a Fulbright Fellow and Executive Director of the Fulbright Foundation and coached the Afghan national basketball team. He was selected by the U.S. Department of State to serve as Senior Political Affairs Officer on the United Nations peacekeeping mission to Afghanistan in 1996-1997. He has testified on various topics related to Afghanistan, U.S.-Pakistani relations, also an important element of our conversation this morning, international terrorism, and human rights before hearings of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee and the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on International Relations. He has also testified before the British Parliament, the French National Assembly, the Norwegian Storting, and the U.N. Select Committee on Human Rights, and has served on the U.S.-Russian Task Force Dartmouth Conference on Regional Conflicts. He is a member of the International Institute for Sustained Dialogue, and he has joined us many times before, so this is a momentous day on which to speak with Professor Goodyear. We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Most of us were up late last night awaiting the president's announcement and then the announcement itself and analysis of the announcement. And I'm sure we'll learn more about this raid during the course of the next few days. I've been looking at foreign press this morning to look at how they are responding to the death of Osama bin Laden. And we'll be welcoming calls at 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Goodyear, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be again with you, Kathleen. Again, call me Tom, please.
All right, Tom. I'll call you Tom. After so many years of asking so many people, where is this guy? Why can't we find this guy? We find him in this very elaborate compound in Pakistan. It's amazing the way he was fortified.
Well, it was, and it certainly led me when I heard of that, and you know the fact that it was well fortified with barbed wire and everything. I've had the opportunity to be in Abbottabad, not in relating to this, but just it's a kind of a hill city, a hill town. In other words, they're called up above the altitude of Islamabad, so a little cooler in the warmer climes, etc., and it's a place you go through to go to other places in Pakistan, and I've done that. It's very much a Pakistani city. In other words, it's not a way station somewhere far away. It's got, somewhere around 1 million people in the area, very much a part of the Pakistani infrastructure. So, and it has, by the way, the cadet training school right nearby, so it's known as a Pakistani military training center. So when I hear about, how well fortified and what kind of a place it was, I cannot yet for the life of me believe that somehow or other someone in Pakistan didn't know where the heck he was. I mean,
right.
It's just too obvious. And I know the way those compounds are set up. I've seen, thousands of them just like it around the country and different parts of Pakistan, and everybody in a wide swath of territory knows who everybody else is somewhere. So that information would have totally escaped the ISI just doesn't ring true.
So do you think that we were finally at our wit's end here, that we kept waiting for Pakistan to conduct a raid to get this guy and they never did?
You know, I don't know that we ever shared that information, and I think we'll have to find that out, Kathleen. You know, maybe this was something that we were doing on our own. My feeling is that I don't believe that we felt that the exchange of that kind of intelligence information would be kept secure if it was exchanged, particularly by our intelligence with the Pakistani intelligence. There are elements within the Pakistani intelligence that I think are very secure and would be probably welcoming this information, but there are others that are not. It's a very amorphous kind of organization that is not, I feel, fully in league with the Pakistani government. I'm sure that Zardari is pleased that this has taken place, more so than maybe leaders within the intelligence communities in Pakistan.
When you first heard the news, as a man who has lived in this part of the world and knows this part of the world so well, what did you think? Did you think that this was a major blow against Al-Qaeda? Did you think that we need to be afraid of retaliation? Did you think of the symbolic victory, the future of Pakistan, the future of Afghanistan? I'm interested, of all people in this country, what you thought.
Well, I have to tell you that all of those thoughts kept racing through my mind. I have to confess that I was watching Desperate Housewives.
Were you really?
I wish I could say I was watching Masterpiece Theater. I had watched that, but I had DVR'd Desperate Housewives. I was watching that, and then somebody, a member of the media, a friend of mine, called and said, "Have you heard the news? Turn on CNN." And I had not, and so I quickly dropped Desperate Housewives and went to CNN. And my first thought really was, okay, in Pakistan, and I didn't know then Abbottabad, but it said in a place near Islamabad. So again, my second thought was, well, this means that, you know, the Pakistanis have had to know all along. And then my third thoughts were about the region and Afghanistan in particular. And also, I was so relieved. It has been so difficult in many ways for me to keep going back and forth to Afghanistan as I do regularly, and people keep asking me, you know, Mr. Tom, why can't the U.S. get Osama bin Laden and Mullah Muhammad Omar and Zawahiri and Hikmet Yar? And we did. And, you know, I think, you know, this is justice, as the president said, and we need to have that sense. We've waited nearly a decade. I felt very elated that we got this son of a gun. And I think, you know, we were able to see just from his brief statement that the plan that President Obama had put together with Leon Panetta worked. And after going through, you know, years and years of whatever we're doing not really having worked. And this is, I think, an achievement for our government, our country, and our leaders right now.
I was saying earlier, I was reading BBC News this morning, and one of their headlines was "Obituary: Osama bin Laden," and I just stayed with that for such a long time. I just looked at it.
Looked,
the obituary of Osama bin Laden.
Well, you know, Jesus, this guy has, you know, he's no longer a part of the management team of, you know, of Al-Qaeda because of his having to remain, having had to have remained under wraps of some kind. But the fact is, it's very symbolic. You know, in a relatively short time, we got all the members of the deck of cards in Iraq, but we really haven't gotten any of those in Afghanistan, and they're the ones who did 9/11.
Right.
And now to know that we got the most symbolic of all of them. This is a setback for the extremist, forces, Islamist Salafi forces of you know, this war with terrorists.
The president last night said early on in his speech, "We must also reaffirm that the United States is not and will never be at war against Islam. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. In fact, he slaughtered many Muslims." That was very carefully put in the speech. Perhaps worried that there might be some kind of payback for this, or how did that play in various Arab nations all over the world.
Well, you know, I thought his choice of words were excellent because he didn't even use any terms like Islamist or, you know, militant Islam or jihadi or anything. He just said he is a person who killed, you know, many, many Muslims. And I thought that was a good point to make. I'll tell you the second kind of tier of thoughts that I had after hearing all this is that one of the things that has happened in the last 3 months is that much of the focus of the Muslim youth throughout the Middle East has been changed by these changes in their countries. Individuals who were not able to participate in their own governance or their own process of governance in their countries had been, for years, decades, going to transnational organizations like Al-Qaeda and its many franchises around the world. And these events in the Middle East started to focus them on events within their own country. What that meant was that the potential recruitment sources for the transnational organizations like Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda in Yemen, Al-Qaeda Al Jazeera, and, you know, with Anwar al-Awlaki, et cetera, this was going to be diminishing their capacity and their sources for recruitment. So this was my second line of thinking. This is something that the Muslim world now, and particularly the Arab world, was watching more closely, was more concerned or focused on an Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda more deeply 3 months ago, 4 months ago. Now their focuses are on their own events in their own countries, and I think we'll hear some things from certain people, but you know, I think that there's a changing environment here, and I think we have to be alert to any possible retaliation. I'm sure there will be attempts to retaliate, but this is, I think, in many ways a kind of transformational event, just like I think the events in the Middle East over the last several months are also transformational.
Mm-hmm. How is it transformational in the country in which you have lived for so long and you visit so regularly and know so well, Afghanistan?
Well, I think a statement by Karzai helped to underscore what my thoughts were immediately, and that is that, you know, he expressed his elation at this news, and he said this, again, you know, proves what we have been saying all along, that the war on terrorism needs to be focusing outside of Afghanistan in Pakistan. I don't know that he used exactly that word, but the implication was obvious. And Afghans have always been saying that the real terrorists are in Pakistan. And, of course, the Pakistanis have been saying the opposite. And this, of course, again, by the virtue of the fact that Osama bin Laden was killed in a city in the heartland of Pakistani governmental control, Abbottabad, underscores what Karzai's and the Afghans' belief is. They all firmly believe that the biggest problems that Afghanistan has today are problems that originate with the unholy alliance that Pakistan has been maintaining with Taliban, Al-Qaeda, the drug lords, et cetera, so that they can influence and interfere in the events in Afghanistan. And I know Afghans welcome this news very, very much because they see Osama bin Laden as someone who violated them and their country as well throughout that period of the 90s up until 9/11. We know of the many thousands who were killed in New York and in that plane wreck in Pennsylvania and Pentagon. But, you know, there were many more thousands of Afghans who were victimized by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda's efforts in league with the Pakistani ISI, the Taliban, and the drug and warlords.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean that we can, or is this too early to ask the question, expect some kind of change in U.S. policy in Afghanistan?
Well, I'm sure that's one thing that Afghans are concerned about. I think they would probably be concerned that we might lose our, focus on Afghanistan with this capture. But I appreciate what President Obama said, that when he mentioned that this doesn't mean the war against the terrorists is over. We still have a long way to go in that area. And this is just, the most important victory in this whole war up to this point. But we know that Mullah Muhammad Omar is still at large. We know that Zawahiri is still at large. We know that Hikmet Yar is still at large, and many, many others whose names aren't as familiar to the rest of us. So, Afghanistan, I've always been saying, Kathleen, I bridle at the suggestion that the war in Afghanistan is our longest land war. That, you know, our longest war was the Cold War. And the war against extremist Islamist terrorist groups connected with al-Qaeda is very much like that. And Afghanistan is a campaign or battle within that war. And if we don't do it right in Afghanistan, it's all going to come back to Afghanistan. We're going to have to be faced with it again, just as we found starting in 2006 when we had been focused in Iraq, and all of a sudden we woke up and all the good news that we thought had been obtained in Afghanistan in 2002, 3, and 4 seemed to be dissipated because we had lost our focus there. And we were no longer really going after those who had attacked us. Mm-hmm. They were coming back and getting us.
Mm-hmm. The Pakistan English language television station Express 24/7, I've never seen it, but there is a report from them that I was reading this morning that said two of Osama bin Laden's wives and six of his children have been detained by U.S. forces. The station also reports that four of the terrorist leader's aides have also been arrested. That's all they have said here. Do you know any of these news reports?
I don't. And, I'm not surprised. I think... I think our intelligence and security apparatus is really getting its sea legs, and has been over the last couple of years. And these kinds of reports would be indicative of that. I think maybe you noted this week that the head of the FBI was lauded on the cover of Time magazine as having, been successful in helping to, secure our security all the better. So I think these things are a product of all that. But I think we need to be guarded about making any conclusions that... like was done in a previous administration, like the mission is accomplished. That's not the case. And this is going to be a very long, protracted war with a very decentralized and, well-equipped enemy.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We'll take them momentarily. Our guest this hour, and I'm so glad that we were able to secure him because I have really been impressed by what he's had to say and his depth of knowledge about Afghanistan and love for the country. Thomas Goodyear is the Dean of International Studies and Programs at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. He was an early Peace Corps volunteer in Afghanistan. He also was a Fulbright Fellow, Executive Director of the Fulbright Foundation, coached the Afghan national basketball team, was selected by the U.S. Department of State to serve as its senior political affairs officer on the United States Nation's peacekeeping mission to Afghanistan. He has testified before Congress and before governmental bodies all over the world on Afghanistan, U.S.-Pakistani relations, international terrorism, and human rights. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
And on nights like this one, We can say to those families who have lost loved ones to Al-Qaeda's terror, justice has been done.
We go to phone calls, starting with Brad in Pewaukee. Hi, Brad.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I'm super, super happy about this. I'm a soldier as well. I heard another soldier call in. I'll tell you what, though, it was a bittersweet type of a sigh of relief. Here's the thing, is that that's great. We've established it's been a symbolic victory. We need to keep it that way. We need to keep our focus. And the fire is starting to smolder. We need to get the blanket and put it on there and put it out immediately, which is kind of what we should have done from the start. As far as where he's been hiding and them knowing about it, I don't know. I just don't know about that, because it would be easy for us to assume something like that, to assume that situation, that we knew this. And there's so many places, so many nooks and crannies to hide. I'm sure the guy never stays in the same place. It's been 10 years. With as intelligent as we are as a country, with our operatives and special agents, there's a good chance that this guy has been that elusive, where it's been that difficult to find him.
Did you serve in the Mideast?
Point fingers and move the thing around. Let's say, great, we got him. Who's coming up in his place? Let's get on that right now. Let's get this next group of people, and let's get out of there. Let's help them fix what they're doing. Let's get it done. So we got a major victory. Let's get the next one and the next one and the next one.
Okay.
Now they're going to have to talk. They're going to have to move. They're going to have to look at what we're doing and readjust fire. That's what we do for them. Let's do that on them. Now we have the upper hand. It's like we put an IED right in their mainframe. So let's take it out. I'm so happy. Those guys did a great job. Good job, fellas. I hope they all get home safe.
What about getting the next one and the next one, the upcoming ones? Do we know a great deal about them, Tom?
Well, I think we have a lot of information about who they might be. The question is, do we have access to them? Certainly the fact that we have accomplished what we have relating to Osama bin Laden would encourage me to believe that we're tightening at least the noose on maybe others as well, and I'm sure the others are being quite wary now relating to their prospects for the future. But I think we know of people like Anwar al-Awlaki, the fellow who was born and raised in New Mexico, who's been very active in Yemen. There are others in Somalia, and of course there's a whole cast of characters operating along the Afghan-Pakistani border, the Haqqani group, the Quetta Shura Mullah Muhammad Omar, Gulbuddin Hikmet Yar's group in the areas north of Peshawar and in the northeast parts of Afghanistan. We know of those folks, and we know that they have been able to obtain resources and refuge in Pakistan. So I recall that at 9/11, our relationship with Pakistan had to be restructured. And the Pakistanis who had been helping various groups now came with us after, I think, some very strong discussions to become partners in the war against these terrorist organizations. I think some of their coming along was cosmetic. Some of it may have been genuine, but it was always schizophrenic. Now I think we've reached another watershed period, and we're going to have to again reconstruct our relationship, one which is a very, very complicated relationship already.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be as much the key to this challenge, and how we deal with the other sources of support for these terrorist organizations within the Persian Gulf, with Iran, et cetera.
We go to Ray in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Yeah, I'm just stunned by your guest not mentioning the Pakistan CIA had wire transferred $100,000 to the hijackers, and bin Laden presumably was working for the CIA during the Afghan excursion in the 80s and 90s. Now, we are deciding that by killing him, we have killed an idea. You cannot kill an idea. And if it comes out now that, like the soldier who just spoke said, let's not point fingers, we need to get to the bottom of why he was hidden there. And did we torture anybody to get the information of where he was? And maybe we tortured women and children.
Tom.
Well, you know, I agree that that killing Osama bin Laden does not kill an idea. The whole network that has been created is a very amorphous, very decentralized collection of franchises or cells that are a part of this large syndicate, in a sense. And I think, you know, we need to redouble our efforts and understand that, because they're going to be redoubling their efforts. The bit about Osama bin Laden working with the CIA, he was working with Afghans and Pakistanis who were working with the CIA to help the Afghans against the Soviet Union. And I don't have any information, or have I ever seen any information, which indicates that he was in any way himself personally employed or working for the CIA. There were many people in and out of Pakistan who were helping the Afghans and others who were fighting against the Soviet Union. It was a very, very kind of wild and woolly environment, with many people from the Muslim world wanting to participate in this war against the atheist Soviet Union.
An email from Bill in Madison. Why was there no directive to take Osama along with as many compound staff residents as possible alive? Could we potentially not have learned considerable amounts if we had brought them in, or was it just simpler for political and foreign relation reasons to kill him?
Well, I think it is simpler. One of the things is, of course, if you capture him, then, you know, he's going to have to go to court, and that takes a long time. I think we saw him as a war criminal, and we went after him in that, with that in mind. And I think probably we're trying to, you know, decide and made the decision that it's better maybe to kill him and grab any information you can from that compound, rather than to prolong and have a drawn out, public, internationally notorious, in a sense, effort that would go in and out of courts, and where is he going to be held, and where is he going to be imprisoned. I think he, too, would probably have precluded us from taking him alive. I don't think that he was going to go alive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would, everything that you hear and everything you read about him indicates that he has even said that. So he didn't want to be taken alive. So, and the other part is, we buried him at sea, supposedly. That means there's a, you know, no chance that people are going to be able to go to his tomb or et cetera and create of him as a martyr. Nobody knows where the heck he is in the sea. And I think that was a wise choice as well. I just hope that we have, and I'm sure we have, all the full DNA and photos, et cetera. That,
oh, I'm sure we must.
We don't have an Elvis kind of,
right,
you know, situation with Osama bin Laden.
I'm wondering about, it has been a long time. 10 years is a long period of time. And I'm wondering about what people thought of him, what young people in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, if they've forgotten who this man is, because all indications are that there were, there was no internet, there was no way for him to communicate other than courier from where he was, so his influence had to have waned. Was his picture on people's caves, or where they were fighting, did they carry a picture of him somewhere in their body, or has he been somewhat forgotten?
Well, I don't think that he was forgotten in that area, and I know in Afghanistan that he was not forgotten. Afghans were concerned about the fact that he and those with him were still at large. And this, you know, they're closer to it, and it has a more of a daily impact on their lives. So he hadn't, I think, escaped from their attention as much as he might have in the West. And we started to focus on other people, like this Al-Awlaki guy in Yemen and many others. And our news media, you know, was not really able to have access or information about what he was doing or where he was. So it wasn't covering him so much other than an occasional retrospective kind of examination. So, but I think in the region, Kathleen, he was very much in people's consciousness, and they, you know, people were wondering why he was still at large, and those who were on his side were, you know, I think he's still able to draw inspiration and boost their morale from his, from that fact. I think the street people in the Middle East were losing their interest in him because of what I mentioned earlier. They're focusing more now on their own country's situations rather than the transnational organizations like Al-Qaeda.
Joseph in Green Bay, hi.
Transnational
I can't hear you, Joseph. Hello? Yeah, you're going to have to call back. Your phone is lousy. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, I was struck by several thoughts when I heard the news. And the first thought, and I think enough can't be said as to the bravery of our Navy SEALs. Just the notion of those guys going in and, you know, doing what they did. I'm sure it's giving a lot of leaders in the world pause. And a question for your guests. So what do we do now with the Pakistanis? I mean, their duplicity is obvious.
Well, let me say first that I agree with your comment about the SEALs, and we didn't learn until after the president's announcement exactly, you know, who was involved, et cetera. But one, you know, who follows that kind of thing would probably was assuming that it was something of that nature, and they to be able to accomplish this where they did is nobody can really understand how remarkable it was. So. Yes, hats off to those courageous, brave people. The where to go with Pakistan is a difficult kind of policy decision. I think the president tried to do everything that he could to move forward by the way he described the link with Pakistan in this event. In other words, he did not say that we did it without their knowing about it. We did it with, you know, because we not telling them because we didn't trust them or whatever it was. He said that we were able to do what we did because of our relationship with the Pakistanis, meaning the overall relationship. And I think the most important thing we need to do now with Pakistan is to have very serious discussions about how together we can carry this overall relationship forward. Pakistan is still going to be concerned more about what goes on in Afghanistan as it relates to Pakistan's focus, obsession, paranoia even relating to India than this event here. And in some ways, I think that the loss of bin Laden kind of dampens the complications in some ways with the U.S.-Pakistani relationship. Offers us another opportunity to focus on other areas, but that's going to be difficult because what we're going to be focusing on is Pakistani support to the Haqqani group, which is killing Afghans and Americans who are fighting there, the Quetta Shura of Mullah Muhammad Omar, which is doing the same, and also the group that the other group the Pakistanis are supporting, that of Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, up in the Bajawar area, the Nuristan area of Afghanistan, Bajawar, Pakistan. When we have these discussions, Pakistanis, the Pakistani ISI, the government has not been willing to give these people up. And that is going to be still a ticklish point because Osama bin Laden death is not anything more than an important victory and an important battle, kind of, but the war still remains, and that's that war, the larger war against the Salafi, extremist, Islamist-driven terrorism.
I think it's worth hearing again what the president said about Pakistan last night, just a portion of it, because I'm interested in your response, Tom. Here it is.
Over the years, I've repeatedly made clear that we would take action within Pakistan if we knew where bin Laden was. That is what we've done. But it's important to note that our counterterrorism cooperation with Pakistan helped lead us to bin Laden and the compound where he was hiding.
There's certainly a lot behind that that maybe we don't know. What did he mean by that? What kind of cooperation?
Well, I think he was saying that the ability of us to function in any way within Pakistan gave us access to intelligence and information and resources that were essential to be able to do what we did. But I note that what he didn't say was that this was done as a collaborative endeavor involving
right.
the two countries in a joint attack campaign or event against Osama bin Laden. I think that he was very adamant in saying the USA did this, and he gave the instructions to go about doing it. And I think that's an important part of it all.
Mm-hmm. Because of the enormity of the horror that he inflicted on the United States and the people who died and the fact that we've been in Afghanistan for 10 years and we haven't found this guy for 10 years, it seems to me as though people are going to want to know every detail of how this happened, where the body is, look at his pictures, talk about the resistance, if there was any, the intricacies of the Navy SEALs maneuver. Are we going to get all that information?
Well, I imagine it's going to come out, and I think that it's going to come out in such a way that it is provided so that we do not offend maybe our allies who may have had some role, at least in a peripheral way, or particularly Pakistan, since this took place in Pakistan. The fact that it took place in Pakistan then gives lie to the assertions in the past by Pakistan that the terrorists were in Afghanistan or related to Afghans, when the Afghans were saying, of course, just the opposite, and then this event seems to back up certainly the Afghans' contentions. So I think we're going to let this come out in such a way, Kathleen, that we are being sensitive to the circumstances that we are having to deal with now and also looking to the future. How are we going to deal with Pakistani government and the many complications of that country's relatively unfathomable, sometimes very schizophrenic, foreign policy in the region.
Jim in Western Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I'm struck by this idea, the idea of the idea. And right after 9/11, we were of the belief that Osama bin Laden was not just attacking in the United States, but was attacking the our support of the oppressors within the Arab world. Don't you think that in the long run, Osama bin Laden and the attack of 9/11 and all of subsequent terrorism will have been some of the sparks that caused the Arab Spring?
Well, if it does, that's a very interesting and I think very provocative kind of question. I think the major spark that it may have provided is that it, because people were engaged in transnational organizations like Al-Qaeda and following that regional politics, the youth were becoming more and more emboldened and more informed. And those are the ones who moved to the streets in Tunisia and Egypt in the beginning that kind of got this whole set of changes in the Middle East on a roll. And I don't think that Osama bin Laden will come off as a person who sparked that more as much as it might be awakening some of the political thinking in those countries that they, why are we only engaged in things that are outside of our country like with Al-Qaeda, why shouldn't we be doing something within our country? And it took 10 years for people to become so emboldened, but I see these as two kinds of events. In other words, Al-Qaeda and its impact and what's going on right now is kind of separate, and I do believe that the activities in the Middle East over the last 3 months really were a setback to Al-Qaeda, because it depended on angry, disaffected youth to be able to recruit into its organization.
More phone calls in a moment. Joining us this hour to talk about the death of Osama bin Laden is Thomas Goodyear. He is the Dean of International Studies and Programs at the University of Nebraska, Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies. His interest in the country has been profound and long-lived. He served and worked for nearly 10 years in Afghanistan. He was a Peace Corps volunteer, one of the early volunteers, and he was selected by the U.S. Department of State, serving as senior political affairs officer on the United Nations peacekeeping mission to Afghanistan in 96 and 97. He has testified on various topics related to Afghanistan, U.S.-Pakistani relations, international terrorism, human rights, before various governmental bodies in the world. And we also like him because he's very down-to-earth. He was raised in Ohio, where he worked in his father's pastry shop. We've talked to him about this before, from age 8 to 24. So he also has a master baking certificate, which he received at the age of 18. So he's not only very, very smart about this area, he's a regular guy, our best kind of guest. More phone calls in a moment. We have a couple lines open if you've been trying to get through. 800-486-8655. If you can't get through this hour, we're continuing our conversation on this, the second hour of the program, with a special focus. One of our guests, the second hour of the program, is a native of Pakistan, who's a political and strategic analyst, writes for many newspapers, and speaks on current topics before civic groups at think tanks. He has worked on projects with the United States Institute of Peace, and he will be joining us the second hour, part of it. Cross Swords is the name of his book, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As you can imagine, Rhonda and Chrissy have been working furiously since last night to get our guests for today. So we are confirming now our 10 o'clock hour. Christine Fair, assistant professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, and will also speak with the director of the South Asia Center at the Atlantic Council of the United States, the author of the aforementioned book. Back to phone calls for Tom and Justin in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
All right. How are you? Go ahead, please.
I'm doing awful, and I'll tell you why. What kind of media reports this way? The problem is not, and never has been, Osama bin Laden. The problem is, and will remain until it is changed, America's foreign policy.
Well, I don't think you can say Osama bin Laden hasn't been a problem. He was a big problem, certainly. But what about U.S. foreign policy? A general question. Take it wherever you want, Tom.
Well, I think that American foreign policy over the last, decade has had its problems. I don't think we're well defined in terms of the pursuit of people like Osama bin Laden and others who were attacking our interests. And it took until December of 2009 before we actually had a policy relating to Afghanistan. It was the first one since 1989, and we oftentimes get into these events because, as a democracy, we're often changing administrations, and we are not always consistent in the, managing of our foreign policy from one administration to the other, or do we set up a set of policies that seem to move well together. We seem to focus on one major thing or another. I think, you know, the major focus for American foreign policy has to be to defend and protect America's interests, both at home and abroad, in our relationships with countries abroad. And sometimes we don't have the focus and the leadership that is essential to do that with the right kind of policies. I think we made a mistake in the periods after 2001, the 9/11 events, and the way we went about our efforts in the Middle East, and particularly in Iraq. And I think that impeded our capacity to go after people like Osama bin Laden. But we also had problems during the 90s as well, when the administration then under Bill Clinton was not focused on the development of terrorist training camps. We had that one attack in 1998, but there wasn't much other things that were being done to identify and understand that this was a very serious potential threat. So I want to make the point, I'm not trying to be partisan here with one or the other, but we didn't get good leadership in our foreign policy relating to terrorism during the first Bush, then the Clinton, and then the second Bush administrations. And I think maybe it's improving now.
Lindy is next. Hi, Lindy.
Hi, good morning. I'm interested in the intelligence that was in the compound, and I'm wondering if we've left someone in place to gather that intelligence, and also if anyone was taken alive out of the compound. And I'll take the answer off air. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I'm interested in the same thing. I don't have any information relating to that. I'm sure that we, after the gunfight and whatever we needed to do to collect Osama bin Laden's body with us, we also were collecting any intelligence, computers, et cetera, that we could. That would be essential, and I'm sure we didn't lose that opportunity. I haven't heard that we've taken anybody alive. I keep hearing about those who were killed. His son, a female who was used as a body shield, et cetera, and a couple of others that were in the compound. I just don't know of any more information relating to personnel and what we were able to do there. But I have a feeling that if we were able to be as patient as we were going from August till the 1st of May to make sure we were doing what we were intending to do correctly, that we were not going to lose that the opportunity to also to gain what we felt we needed to gain from taking out bin Laden and then collecting anything that would be helpful for the long-term campaign against the terrorist organizations.
Thanks, Lindy. Curtis in Illinois. Hi. Curtis, are you there? I'm sorry, it's just too noisy. Randy is next from Laval. Hi, Randy.
Hi, yeah. I wonder if your guests would react to this. I have two sons that have served multiple tours there, and one heading back right now, and one that speaks Arabic. And the mindset there we talk about a lot. And it seems as though the president's done something very positive here. That I think was going to go in our favor. Our enemy, and possibly now maybe some folks that will become our friends, they seem to react more to what we do than what we say. And in the past, a lot of times we would have a big rhetoric, sometimes that would be inflammatory, whereas this, the whole area, they seem to react positively if you just simply do something and carry it off.
Well, you know, I agree with you, and I think that this has to be a morale booster for all of our friends, but particularly for our troops as well. The Marines have been exceedingly effective in the fighting in Afghanistan over the last year and a half, particularly in the Helmand Valley and in and around Kandahar. They're very essential to our strategy there. And so I didn't get whether or not your sons were in Iraq or Afghanistan.
One boy's a Ranger, an Army Ranger, and the other boy is in electronics warfare with the Navy.
Uh-huh. So they're all very essential. You know, we can never thank our young soldiers enough for what they do, male and female, and protecting us and our interests around the world. And I've seen them. We worked with them very closely here at our Center for Afghanistan Studies. We've done 3-week-long immersion intensive orientation programs for about 30 groups that have been now working in Afghanistan, over 600 of our military leaders and advisors. And I have only the highest respect for what they do and what they, you know, provide for our security and safety.
And we have the highest respect for you. Tom, we're out of time. Thank you so much. You're just the person I was happy we could bring before our listeners today. Thank you.
You bet. Good to be with you, Kathleen.
Tom Goodyear, he is the Dean of International Studies and Programs at the University of Nebraska, an early Peace Corps volunteer many years ago in Afghanistan and lived in the country for 10 years. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. We have more on this topic following the news.